investigative journalist Molly Barrows. For years, I've covered the stories that made headlines in Northwest Florida and all along the Gulf Coast. Murders. Missing persons. And mysteries of all kinds. These cases are far from over for many victims, because the full story has yet to surface. Join me for Gulf Coast Confidential, where I dive into the saltier side of the South and expose the lies, greed, and corruption that often weighs down the truth. It's time to turn the tide and get a shot at justice. Hi, I'm Molly Barrows, a longtime reporter in Florida's Panhandle, and welcome to my investigative series, Gulf Coast Confidential, where I dive into the saltier stories that surface in Northwest Florida and all along the Gulf of Mexico. My co-host is Pam Hill. Pam, thanks for joining me as always.
Thank you.
And folks who listen to this regularly know that Pam's sister was killed by her son, Pam's nephew, on Christmas Eve of 2013. And as a pharmacist and a grief and loneliness researcher as a result of what she has been through, she has a unique perspective on a lot of these cases that I talk about here on Gulf Coast Confidential. And this one is an update on that case. So it certainly hits close to home for Pam. And we're calling this episode, He Killed His Mother, for Heaven's Sakes. And so, of course, we're talking about Brandon Adelot, who killed his mother, Sharon Adelot. He was just 17 years old. She was 48. Christmas Eve of December 2013. And he just showed up on her doorstep. He had hidden a knife that he brought from his father's apartment, left it in the seat next to him, drove several miles to her house, had multiple times to change his mind. But he said that there were numerous voices in his head, including those of his dad telling him to kill his mom. He said he looked around his dad's apartment, but he couldn't find a gun. And when he couldn't find a gun, he grabbed the knife and he hid it up his sleeve as he walked up to knock on the door of his mother, who was expecting him that night, as well as his younger sister, Elizabeth Adelot. She was just 10 years old then. Brandon was 17, as I mentioned. But he showed up and started stabbing her basically as soon as she opened the door. She was expecting both of them to take them to Christmas Eve services, as well as a family party that Pam was actually hosting that night. And she was preparing for that party when she got the news of what Brandon did to Sharon. So, Pam, we'll start with the update real quick. Brandon Adelot was found not guilty by reason of insanity in 2016 for killing his mom in 2013. He was then remanded into the custody of the Department of Children and Families and sent to Florida State Hospital, which is where Florida sends the criminally insane. That's in Chattahoochee, Florida, in the Panhandle, about 3 hours east of Pensacola. So Pam and I have traveled there multiple times. I was there while Pam was talking to her nephew, heard multiple conversations between them. And I think, you know, it's hard enough to lose a family member to a violent crime, as we've talked about on other episodes. It's hard enough to watch another family member kill. Your nephew killed your beloved baby sister. And that was shocking and horrible enough. But I think what adds to your pain is that there really seems to be no justice, because every 6 months, as a result of being found not guilty by reason of insanity, you know, there's an evaluation, a competency evaluation, to determine if he, quote unquote, still meets the criteria for commitment to Florida State Hospital. Basically, it means, is he still crazy enough to keep him there, is a conversational way of putting that. And up until recently, the state of Florida has been saying that he still met the criteria for commitment. Well, just recently, just this month, December of 2023, here we are, the 10-year anniversary of Brandon killing his mother, because he said voices told him to do it. He is now, the state of Florida is saying, you know what, I think he's moving right along. And they've actually sent him back to the Santa Rosa County Jail, where he is basically back in the custody of the Santa Rosa Sheriff's Office. He has a hearing that's coming up on January 4th, where they will discuss the state's recommendation. And by state, I mean the Department of Children and Families. They'll discuss the state's recommendation saying that he no longer meets the criteria for commitment and what those next steps mean. I did notice in the clerk of court's filing that there is a plan for him that the state has also included, but it's not one that I can access. It's not open to the public. But we've had other cases here locally of another man, Chris Lynch, who was found not guilty by reason of insanity for killing his mother. He beat her to death with an iron pipe, and then he actually is already out of Florida State Hospital. He's already in what they call a residential treatment program in the Tallahassee area, and apparently it seems as though Brandon Adelot is trending that same way. And I know that this is just a kick in the gut for you and your sister Patricia and your niece Brianna. I know it's that's hard for you guys to hear this.
It's unreal. We never thought this would happen, because Bill Edens, the state attorney, told us that Adlot will never get out. He killed his mother, for heaven's sakes. That's what he told us. And as far as this, and they said that they would pursue the insanity plea. They didn't say not guilty by reason of insanity, because I know me. I would never, ever co-sign on to that, because he admitted that he killed her. He told us how savage, how brutal, how barbaric that he killed Sharon. He knocked some of her teeth out with a baseball bat. He almost decapitated her. He broke part of her jaw that went across the room, left knives impaled and gouged in her eye and skull, and just more, more, more. It's more than normal people can even fathom, and I feel like the biggest mistake I ever made in my life was not telling these things early on. We tried to be private and polite and these things like this, but it is all about the narrative, and it's all about the criminal. And my sister was a beautiful, lovely lady. She was probably the best mother ever, and she loved and adored Brandon and her children and the children at school. It's just, to me, I feel like I'm in a parallel universe, because I'm not a dummy. I know what not guilty means. He stood there and said he killed Sharon Hill. That's her maiden name. That's our family name. And he's felt like he did the right thing. So it is really, I just feel so disrespected. I feel so disrespected for my sister, for my family. Here we are 10 years later, and Brandon got up here some sort of way, and nobody told us. I know there are laws that say that you have to tell victims when someone's being moved. And I never would have agreed to anything if I knew the Children and Family Services were going to be making the decision. They send me letters quite frequently telling me how well my son, Brandon, is doing.
So you don't hold any judgment in what their assessment is?
I don't. I put zero stock in that. They don't even know what he did. They don't even know that he killed his mother. And then they're sending me insensitive letters about what my son is doing. I mean, it is the biggest, like I said, it's so disrespectful. It is so bizarre, but yet nobody checks behind any of this. I was under the assumption that a judge is in charge of a courtroom in cases, and that is not exactly true. So my thing with people is, don't accept anything. Put all the information out there. Insanity plea, especially in our state, there's only not guilty by reason of insanity. And like I said, nobody told me the two words not guilty, because I know me, and I would have never agreed to that, whether they could have gone on without me agreeing or not. But I would have raised 19 kinds of hell, I can tell you that.
Right, and I believe that. And, you know, I've talked to the prosecutor's office, the state attorney's office, and we've had that exact same discussion. And I said, well, the family feels like it wasn't clear to them that by, you know, accepting, for lack of a better word, this not guilty by reason of insanity plea, that essentially defense, I should say, that Brandon was making, that that's what it was going to entail.
Right.
That it was going to mean, if that was if the jury went along with that, or the judge in this case went along with that in this case, then it was going to be 6 months of evaluation. You know, every 6 months it comes up to be evaluated, and it's tough on the family. It's being re-traumatized. I think all of that could have been more clear to you guys. But to your point, the prosecutor that was speaking to said, well, it wouldn't matter. They don't have a say. And I thought, well, is that what this is about? Is this about territorial lines of what they can and can't have a say? And that may be true. I'm sure they're going to abide by the law. But I do think if you and your family had truly recognized what the full impact of him being found not guilty by reason of insanity, and what that was going to mean for his sentence, and what that was going to mean for you, because essentially he is not guilty of the crime of murder. He was found not guilty by reason of insanity of the crime of murder. And as Pam said, an extremely brutal murder, one that made headlines across the country, across the globe. And to hear this prosecutor say, well, it wasn't her choice. Yes, that's true, but you get the point.
Yeah.
And I think, to your point, you would have said, no, we'll hire our own attorney, or maybe we'll take another route, or maybe we'll stand there and say, no, state attorney's office, we really would like for you to fight harder on this. What information is out there?
Right.
And I think you guys were under the impression, well, this is what our sister would want. She wouldn't want to see her baby boy go to prison, but we do want him held accountable, because if it's truly mental illness, then he does need to be treated. And mind you, he wasn't diagnosed. He was eventually diagnosed with schizophrenia, but it wasn't until after he killed his mother. And she had known something was wrong and had been trying to get him help for months. But because she and the father were divorced, and he basically, they were divorced because he filed for divorce several years earlier after he'd been busted for trying to have sex with a 14-year-old in his science class. And he was fired for an inappropriate relationship. And within days, he filed for divorce from Sharon. Even though he tried to change his mind, their relationship ended. And due to numerous witnesses I've talked to, numerous people, his former roommate that he lived with at the time after he left Sharon's house, he was bitter. He was angry, and he was blaming everybody but himself. And Sharon was an easy target. And I think he also understood, too, that to hurt her was to hurt her children to a certain extent. And maybe he, you know, I don't know what voices Brandon heard. I don't know what went through his mind, but I do know that he confessed to investigators with a smile that he had killed Sharon Hill and that he did the right thing. Mm-hmm. He felt like, and yes, he was saying bizarre things, and yes, he was behaving bizarrely, but it made sense to him, and killing her felt like the right thing to do to him. And when you know all the circumstances that led up to this, I can see why this would just be outrageous. Mm-hmm. And especially when we talk about how this case made national headlines and international headlines at the time in 2013. But if you go back and Google it at the time that it broke, it's mother was arguing with son. They'd been arguing for months. And it, to your point about the narrative, that's why it's so important, because even in his confession, I have pulled all the police reports. I have pulled the investigative reports. I have seen the transcripts of what investigators talked to him about the night that he confessed, the night he was barely in his orange jumper sitting there talking to them about what he had done. It was hours after he had killed his mother. Her blood was barely cold. And he's telling them, no, he goes, I was doing the right thing. I was listening to these voices. This is what I wanted to do. I killed this. I killed her because she basically he was saying she deserved it.
Well, and Sharon had tried to get Brandon help. She put him in a rehab, and Randy, his dad, went and checked him right out because he said he needs to go play baseball.
And that was 2 weeks before he killed her.
Right. And he said, well, your insurance isn't going to pay for it. Sharon's insurance isn't. My dad, my mom, and I agreed that we would pay for that. He's our family. If something's wrong with him, he's saying all these bizarre things, texting a girlfriend, all this bizarre stuff, throwing balls at boys on his team, baseballs
punching
in their face,
people as well.
Punching them, hiding. I mean, Sharon was trying to get him help, and we had an intervention for him. And Brandon, I've got that on tape, and every time I show that to people, it chills their blood when they see how he was acting. And, I mean, he was being miserable and hateful to the little Yorkies that they had, to Biz, to Sharon, to us. I mean, he was doing everything he could. Even my 80-year-old dad, at my dad's 80th birthday party, he kind of bowed up to my dad in front of about 80 people at a birthday party and just being bizarre. But Randy even blamed Sharon for trying to help Brandon. So it just, she tried, and nobody would help her. That's why I get so offended by everybody in the world trying to let a murderer come back home, right to the voices he heard, right to the place where he killed Sharon, he murdered her, and had a hit list of some boys over there, even went to the boy's house after he killed Sharon. So he's coming home.
Right. And to the point that I forgot to make earlier is that he told the investigators that night that they did not argue. Mm-hmm. So here splashed across headlines across the world that they had this terrible argument. So people naturally come to this conclusion like, well, maybe she was a nag. Maybe she was this. Maybe she was that. But that was not the case at all. He even told the investigators there was no argument. Mm-hmm. She just opened the door and he started stabbing. Mm-hmm. He went over there to kill her. He accomplished what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. He grabbed a Sprite out of the refrigerator when he left and he stepped over her body. Mm-hmm. Went to a friend's house to kill him, too, but the friend wasn't there. So then he went to Winn-Dixie, a grocery store parking lot close by, basically smoked a little weed to calm down, listened to some rock music, he said. And then he went home to take a shower. And that's where police found him, in his apartment, taking a shower to wash the blood off of his body. And they found blood on his clothes and a little bit of blood still in his ear.
Sharon's blood in his ear. And, you know, it's so incredulous to me that all this can happen. And it just becomes academic or didactic where people are like, well, this is what happened. They were not arguing. Sharon loved him so much. She almost died having him. She was counseled to abort him, basically. But she loved him.
Because he had failure to thrive issues in the womb.
And other issues, genetic issues that they said. But Sharon, I remember her. Sharon was so sweet. She looked at me and she said, Pam, that's not a choice for me. You know, she prayed him into being. She wanted him so much. That's the reason I think she got married. She was a 26-year-old virgin, and she wanted to have a family. And I think that she just looked at that. Basically, she did. She told me, she said, Pam, the thing I love more than anything else is being their mama, being Brandon and Biz's mama.
I know. And that's so interesting, too, because, again, I pulled all the police reports and I found the statements that Randy Adelot, Brandon's dad and Sharon's ex-husband, made to police. And he immediately tried to basically point the finger at her.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells them that she was, quote unquote, emotionally abusive. And the example that he gives is that he basically was saying that she didn't like having real men around the house and would run off real men because that they should be in charge simply because they're men is essentially mm-hmm. what his attitude came across to me. But he tells them that she was emotionally abusive, and that the example that he gave is like he bought her a ring for Christmas one time and she didn't like it and wanted to go exchange it for one that she did. And he said that that hurt his feelings. And it, from that point on, she just wanted to buy her own present. Mm-hmm. He felt like that was rude and dismissive of him.
He said that he treated
Brandon the same way. Even if it didn't, what a lame example. Yeah. That's just mm-hmm. people for you.
Sharon wouldn't do that.
And she's not even dead. And again, she had nothing to do with him trying to have sex with a 14-year-old girl.
No.
She tried to stop it. She tried to raise the alarm when she found out about it. She wanted to make sure that there was an investigation, which there was not much of an investigation. And if you want to hear more about that, just check out Confessions in the Fieldhouse. There was all but a cover-up, basically, to keep him from getting mm-hmm. into trouble and to go after the little girls that found out what he was doing and eventually reported it. So I know this is frustrating all the way around to hear that Brandon's about to get out. And when I say about to get out, he is out of Florida State Hospital. He's now in the custody of the Santa Rosa Sheriff's Office. And as a result of that, basically, he's in the Santa Rosa County Jail. And then come January 4th, there'll be a hearing where the state attorney's office tells me they're going to ask the court to appoint more experts, essentially more mm-hmm. psychologists who will also do independent evaluations. But it's the same thing they did with Chris Lynch, who beat his mother mm-hmm. to death on Mother's mm-hmm. Day, who's already out in a residential treatment program. They had additional experts for him as well, and they all unanimously agreed that he was no longer a threat to himself or others. But they did say that he was, quote unquote, moderate risk for violence mm-hmm. and always will be, because in Chris Lynch's case, he had a head injury from training during the military, a military exercise that they said contributed to his mental illness. But it was also exacerbated by substance abuse and not taking his medication. Well, anytime anybody's out of these treatment programs, that's one of the first things they often don't want to do is to continue to take their meds. Mm-hmm. So in these residential treatment programs, it's basically you earn privileges through a tiered program, start in a locked facility, and then as to show you can be trusted, you move to more less restrictive facilities where you can come and go as you please a little bit more. So that's the facility that Chris Lynch is in, and you know that's what there's talk of perhaps sending Brandon to, is another similar type residential treatment facility where he will have to prove that he's responsible about taking his medications and, I guess, attending whatever classes that they've got them attending. But, you know, either way, he had everything going for him at mm-hmm. the time he killed his mother. He had everything. He had a baseball scholarship he was potentially pursuing. He was a talented baseball player. He was a straight-A student in the last few months when he had moved out of his mother's home and was living with his father. His grades crashed. His mental health crashed. And everything went downhill, started showing up late for work on a regular basis. But before that, everything had been going great for him. And if he did this to his mother when everything was as good as it could be, you know, what's he going to do now that he's already been in years of basically a mental health hospital where they've been feeding him drugs? And we don't really understand what level of care he gets behind those closed doors, because it is HIPAA and it is mm-hmm. private. But we do know, because you've been hand in lock and step with mm-hmm. him for years before he cut you off recently. But you know he tried to kill another patient while he was there early on. It would just be great to have a look at their record. It would also be great, I think, to take a look at the recidivism rate for some of these folks that are found not guilty by reason of insanity, regardless of the violent crime that they committed. And this is not negative towards people with mental health. I'm all for second chances. I'm all for proper resources. I think those resources need to be way more available on the front end. I think if Sharon Adelot were alive today, she would certainly be the first to support that. She tried to get her son help, not realizing that he was suffering from schizophrenia. He was also abusing drugs at that time. He was also doing spice. Mm-hmm. Both of his parents were concerned about it. He had failed an over-the-counter drug test. That's why they held the drug intervention. But his parents simply weren't on the same page, yeah. You know. Randy Adelot has declined numerous requests for an interview. So has his recently, of-age daughter, Elizabeth Adelot. They both have told the court that they support Brandon basically getting out of Florida State Hospital and going to a residential treatment program. But after this, to wrap that up, on the January 4th hearing is when the state will basically ask the court, and they expect to get the additional expert witnesses, and then they'll set a hearing at a later time where they'll evaluate what those experts come in and say, and then it will be up to the judge to decide whether or not Brandon should go back to Florida State Hospital or if he should, you know, go to a residential treatment facility. But the way they've set it up, and when I say they, I mean the state of Florida, it's they rely so heavily on these expert witnesses. It's all but just rubber stamping, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You know. So even if you have these two other experts that say, well, maybe one or two of them, you know, so this is what I'm thinking. Like, if they don't all agree, so does the judge have discretion because they don't all agree? Mm-hmm. What if they all agree that he should get out and the judge doesn't think so? Is he going to go against what they say? Mm-hmm. I mean, probably not. That's not what's happened in the mm-hmm. past. So it's almost like they abdicate, to me, the court's responsibility by just leaning so heavily on these expert witnesses. And mm-hmm. who are these experts? How do they get to decide what justice is in Florida?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been an expert witness before. Many times. And, I mean, an expert witness is who hires them. If the prosecution tells you, we need to see it this way, you're going to tell the truth. But if you say, well, I see, you're not our expert witness. You keep going till you get one that you like. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've been eliminated many times before because I'm going to say the truth. But, I mean, here we are. We start with this. Brandon lived a charmed life. He hated his dad after he tried to have sex with the little girl that sat beside him in his science class. The only person that cared about that little girl, not the principal, not the coaches, not Randy, not any of the teachers over there, was my sister Sharon. And I feel like that's why she's dead, because she didn't go along with the huddle of secrecy and protect Randy. You know now, if Randy would have done that, what he did back in 2010 right now, he would be under the jail forever.
There were several hundred texts where he had exchanged texts with this underage girl. Mm-hmm. Many of them were sexual. It was clear, even mm-hmm. the police who declined to charge him did put in the report mm-hmm. that he was clearly grooming the girl for sexual contact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we all can read. So, I mean, it's no big deal about that. But the thing is, every time Sharon asks for help, it just kills me. I really am just going to go to the simple premise. Bill Edens told me that Adelot will never get out. He killed his mother, for heaven's sakes. Now, what am I supposed to do as a person with some sense? My sister's dead. She was killed savagely by her own son. And you're the state attorney and you tell me that? Am I supposed to go, oh, well, no, really, I don't think you mean that. You know, that is what he told me. And they did not tell me not guilty. And like I said, in our state, we don't have guilty by reason of insanity. And that is what I'm working on right now, is to get that law changed. Because he admitted what he did to Sharon. He smirked and giggled and smiled about it. And he thought it was, I guess, hilarious and funny. Yet here he is now. And let's say he's a moderate risk. Who moderately wants to live next to him? And what person moderately out of your family are you going to sacrifice? He's already killed my sister and mother and daddy by carnage and almost killed me and Patricia. You know, so, I mean, it's so savage. I don't think about unpleasant things. I don't let my mind do that. But this has haunted me for 10 years. The sweetest girl I've ever known, he did all that too. And I on Christmas Eve. And I cannot even believe we're talking about this, of him being moved out. Him getting put in the Florida State Hospital was a gift. A gift. In hindsight, I would raise hell at anybody trying to do an insanity plea.
Excellent. Well, I think that would be your takeaway from
it
this
would.
Particular episode.
And to speak up every chance you get, you will get tired. I promise people they'll get tired of hearing me. I will not stop speaking up for my sister until I am in the grave.
Well, and my takeaway is something that supports what you're saying as well, because I know you were reluctant to talk to the press early on. You're in shock. You don't know what's mm-hmm. going on. But somebody was putting it out there that there was an argument. Yeah. Somebody was trying to tell that narrative, even though Brandon confessed to the investigators not hours later that there was no argument. Somebody was trying to direct that. And I'm sure that somebody was there at the scene, telling police at the scene, who were then telling reporters. And it created this false narrative right off the bat that there was this argument, and it gave people, even Brandon's coaches, one of his coaches was quoted as saying, well, he was having a hard time because of the divorce 3 years earlier, because the dad had tried to have sex with a 14-year-old girl. But it basically puts the blame in the lap of the mother. So I just feel like this is a multi-layered story in many ways. But I definitely think that, you know, God forbid anything horrible like this happened to somebody, but find somebody who will advocate for you, or that you can trust to get the word out fairly and honestly. Right.
And I've made myself available to plenty of people that they're writing their victim impact statements, or they don't. I'll go sit with them in court. I'll do anything to help them, because there's no roadmap for this. And I'll tell you, the reason I didn't speak to the press immediately right after that is because they got it wrong, and I didn't know where to go or who to talk to. That is why I reached out to you 3 years later. I remember the moment that I did reach out to you, because I'm like, this isn't right. This has been wrong. And I just don't expect people to lie. I don't expect people to kill their mother, regardless of what's going on. And a friend found her. Sharon's bitter ex-husband found her.
With his daughter, with their daughter.
Right, brought her up to the door. Girl. Yeah, up to the door with the blood, Sharon's blood all over the door. And he knew what happened. He's the one that called 911. He knew. Who would go up to the door and go, my son, he killed her, he stabbed her in the head? Who would even think that their child did that? Much
That's
less
what he told 911.
Scream it on the 911 call.
Yeah. There's a lot of questions about this, and we're going to continue to talk about it. And the big one will be, what will the court decide about Brandon? But what they're telling us is that it's trending towards him being allowed to be released for, you know, to a residential treatment program. But we'll see what happens. It'll be January 4th that his next hearing date is, and I imagine they'll set another hearing date after that. But either way, we'll follow it. I know you'll be there on January 4th.
Oh, I'll be there, and I'm going to fight it every step of the way. He killed his mother, for heaven's sakes.
Excellent. Well, Pam, thank you so much. And thank you for joining us for this episode of Gulf Coast Confidential. I'm your host, writer, and producer, Molly Barrows, with co-host and researcher, Pam Hill. And a big thanks to director, editor, and production engineer, James Roy. And remember, you can listen to more of our Gulf Coast Confidential episodes wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And you can also watch on the Gulf Coast Confidential YouTube channel. Don't forget to like and subscribe. We'll see you next time.